Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to this special edition of the Feuersteins Fire Internet Soccer Radio Show, podcast show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. And today, of course, as everyone is aware of, there's no Major League Soccer action as they are taking a break because of international schedule, the World Cup qualifying situation going on in CONCACAF, as well as, of course, if you're following the European Cup qualifying, and there's also some friendlies going on as well, including USA versus Costa Rica today. This is going to be the special show where we're going to discuss about World Cup qualifying in the CONCACAF region, and of course, and then we're going to review late night, Friday night, USA versus Costa Rica at the Home Depot Center. Joining me for the USA Costa Rica review will be, of course, my fellow MLS Talk writers, Robert Hay Jr. and Earl Reed, and of course, talking about CONCACAF, Mr. Michael Lewis, of course, Big Apple Soccer, and of course, he writes for his other website called Trophy Gold, capital letter, really not really capital letter, but it's spelled TROPIGOL, TROPIGOL.com, and he'll be joining me, and we'll be discussing some pretty interesting qualifying matches that happened yesterday on Friday night, September the 2nd. Ladies and gentlemen, I have to say that isn't it great that we can discuss World Cup qualifying today with no matches in Major League Soccer? We can sit here today on a Saturday. Strangely enough, it is a Saturday, but we can discuss World Cup qualifying and other things because it's not an official match. It's a friendly for the USA, and that's it. Nothing else. This is what you wanted, folks. This is what you've been striving for. This is what you've been begging for, pleading for, wanting, hoping. You go to the pillow. You sleep, you dream, please, please, football gods, soccer gods, please, please, let's follow the international calendar. Let's please follow the international calendar so we don't have to worry about league play interrupting World Cup qualifying. Please, please, help us, please, help us out. And you know what? He heard you. Now, granted, that some of the matches for the USA were played during league games, and even though those were considered an international friendly, like the game against Argentina at the new Meadowlands Stadium in this past March, where it was a final of 1-1, but there was MLS games being played. But still, you have to say to yourself, Major League Soccer has done some good here. Out of all the, after all and all the times they get trashed for no promotion relegation, where's the single table? Why are we having playoffs? Why can't we follow the international calendar? This has finally started to come to fruition. Do I believe that maybe every single friendly date or super international date needs to be probably heeded by Major League Soccer? At the moment, I don't think that's going to happen. Unless they change their mind and they say that they'll do it. For that to happen and for everything to work all around, you might have to start playing in the beginning of March. At least give it the extra 2 weeks in the regular season, to allow every single international break to be done. It's not going to happen right away. I think at the moment what they're going to do, like I said before, is they're going to allow those special dates for World Cup qualifying. And at the same time, now talking about, well, if you gave 2 weeks off in the group stage during the World Cup in 2010, what about the Gold Cup? Because it is once every 2 years. Maybe that's going to start happening as well. But until that time comes, and until you can sit there and say to yourself that everything will be discussed and everything will be looked at, observed, that was the word I was looking for, observed. Until that day happens, right now, the more important international match days that need to be observed and heeded is, of course, the one and only qualifying for the World Cup. Once those dates are observed for World Cup qualifying, then maybe, just maybe, when things probably get a little more better. And of course, some of you are saying, but they are already better, which is true. But still, are we there all the way? At the moment, I don't think so. Will it happen? It will. Give it some time. Give it an opportunity. Let's see what we can do, or let's see what Major League Soccer can do to allow these things to happen. As some of you know, there are some people who want this to happen ASAP, as soon as possible. Would it be nice to have it done as soon as possible? Wait, listen, of course. Of course it would be. It would be fantastic to have all these things done as soon as possible. But let's sit back, let's relax, let's take things one at a time, and hopefully, we can see the positives coming, and we can definitely feel that these positives will be acted out. I think right now where we are, we're in a good place. At the moment, we're in a good place. There shouldn't be any problems right now. But to be fair here, the real reasons why Major League Soccer decided to have these dates and the respect for their national calendar was because they thought that CONCACAF was going to get their World Cup qualifying procedure changed into basically 8 groups of 4 in this particular round, then 4 groups of 4 in the semifinal round, which would be next year, and then 2 groups of 4 for the final round, no hexagonal, and it would have been maybe probably 4 automatic spots, 2 per group, and then that would have been it, and then you go into the World Cup because Brazil, of course, is the host nation out of South America in 2014. Now, as some of you remember, Chuck Blazer was not happy that the designation of automatic bids remained the same, of course, Africa with 5, Europe with 13, Asia with 4.5, the half spot to Oceania, South America not only having Brazil going in, but keeping their 4.5, which would really be 5.5, and then CONCACAF with 3.5. So the idea, of course, is to give the Caribbean nations, as well as those in Central America, who want more qualifying games, and of course those like Mexico and the USA and maybe even Canada are hoping for basically not so many qualifiers. But still, though, I think this worked out pretty well. I think right now it's worked out pretty well for CONCACAF. The first day came, and if you have Gold TV in the United States, you were lucky enough to see the Canadian World Cup qualifier against St. Lucia And you got to say, that was a pretty damn good game. That was a pretty damn good game from Canada. At the same time, we'll get more into this as soon as our next segment comes your way in a couple of minutes or so. But I thought it was great that we were able to catch that. Wish there was some more during that day. But, of course, if you're following FIFA.com, I was following FIFA.com. I like to keep track of World Cup qualifying. And to be fair here, it's not so much I care about, well, I'd rather watch European World Cup qualifying and then, of course, the USA and the CONCACAF. Forget about the rest. For me, I enjoy this. I like to see what the heck's going to happen. I like to see if there's going to be any favorites going by with ease, if they got by with a victory, but it wasn't a quality victory. Could there be an upset by someone against a favorite? That's what I'm talking about. I'd like to see what's going on. I'd like to see how the world qualifies from over 200 countries into 31 spots into 2014 World Cup qualifying. This is stuff that's exciting to me. I find it interesting. I like it. I enjoy it. I really don't mind it. I can care less if it's someone from Oceania, maybe somebody like, I don't know, not New Zealand, more like New Caledonia or Fiji, maybe Papua New Guinea, just to see what they do against New Zealand towards the end, if they're going to try and fight for that last, for that half spot. And, of course, they're going to be in a playoff against CONCACAF. I like to see what's going to happen in Asia. Of course, we found out that Syria got eliminated. They got removed by FIFA because they used an ineligible player, not just in the first leg, but they were going to use him in the second leg. And then what happened was that Syria got eliminated by FIFA. They disqualified them because of the use of the ineligible player. So basically the qualifier against Tajikistan took over for Syria in Group C. So, you know, you don't like to see that, but hey, the Group C in Asia is now Japan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and North Korea. But like I said before, I want to see what goes on in CONCACAF. I want to see how the little ones in CONCACAF do outside of Jamaica and Trinidad Tobago. St. Lucia, while in that qualifier against Canada, they played pretty darn good. You've got to give them credit. As we all know, I believe the Caribbean countries are athletic. They are fast. They have some technical ability. But I think, to be fair, it's about how they can get these games when they can put together a solid performance and score more than just a goal. And if they can do it on the road. Canada played a strong game, as usual. But you can see where Canada sometimes gets themselves into trouble when they seem to be overly pumped. And to be fair, the scoreline should have been a lot more than we saw out there. It probably should have been a full-out destruction in both halves. But we'll get more into that with our first guest, of course, he'll be joining us soon. And, of course, that is Mr. Michael Lewis of Big Apple Soccer. And, of course, his CONCACAF website called tropigol.com, writing about the entire CONCACAF Confederation on anything and everything that goes on within CONCACAF. I have to tell you, I'm very glad that we have Michael Lewis coming on very shortly, as he will discuss all the situations in all the groups. And, of course, this is the second round of qualifying for the Confederation, as the first round was basically a goal aggregate playoff to get the last five spots to get into round two of CONCACAF. And, of course, round three will be the U.S. and Jamaica in Group A, Mexico, Costa Rica in Group B, Honduras and Cuba in Group C. And, of course, the winners of Groups E and F will be joining the USA and Jamaica. The winners of Groups A and B will be joined with Mexico and Costa Rica. And then the winners of group C and D will be joining Honduras and Cuba. So it's going to be very interesting. Six matches, all within this end of the calendar year. Two right now in September, one that's already passed. Two in October coming up on the 7th and the 11th. And, of course, November, the 11th and I believe the 15th, we'll see what's going to happen in CONCACAF going on with everything that is happening with this confederation for World Cup qualifying. And joining us very soon, hopefully, or we might have to give him a call if I can remember. I have his cards. that would be nice, you know. Got to make sure that I have all my information correctly. Make sure that we have our good friends available for us, but coming on the show. But just to go ahead with CONCACAF, is that CONCACAF, you have to say the quality is getting better. We don't know how much better, but I will say that what we've seen so far from them is that the quality, with the help of Major League Soccer, is giving these players for their other countries, you know, to come on and to give it their all. There is plenty of players that play for Chicago who come from Guatemala. Of course, players from Jamaica and Trinidad and Tobago that play for the New York Red Bulls, for DC United. Anything and everything going on. And we have to say that right now, it looks to be pretty good, and it looks to be pretty exciting what's happening with the Confederation. Let's move on to some of the scores, and let's talk about that Canadian World Cup qualifier if we can. Of course, if you were watching Gold TV, you saw Canada doing well early on. They played very good. I have to say that in the first half, fantastic goal from Will Johnson. Excuse me, not Will Johnson. That's my bad. He came on as a second-half substitute. It's Josh Simpson. That's what I meant to say. Josh Simpson coming on to start the match. 6 minute. Ball was deflected twice, once off the keeper and the second time off the defender and going into the net. So you can definitely say that for Canada, it was a very good start. But then all of a sudden, everything you hear about Canada, what you don't want to happen will happen. And in the next minute, Tremaine Paul, he bent that ball pretty good into the net. Lars Hirschfeld just could not see that ball. He was screened, not just by his own two defenders, but by the other St. Lucia defender. And he just missed it. And then throughout the entire first half, Canada was pressing. They had great runs. They just couldn't find a way to put it all together. So you have to say for Canada, that first half, even though they got the lead and then lost, they got the lead in 1 minute, and then the next they lost the lead. You have to say that was a disappointing first half for Canada. But in the second half, it all finally came together. There was a handball in the area in the 50th minute. Dwayne De Rosario was elected to take the penalty, converts it to make it 2-1 Canada in the 51st. And then it was all Canada from there. 10 minutes later, Josh Simpson finally gets his brace. Will Johnson in second-half stoppage time, the first minute of second-half stoppage time, converts his chance. And that would be all for Canada. And, of course, for St. Lucia, Pernell Williams in the second half was sent off in the, believe, in the 89th minute. Of course, he was riding an early yellow card in that in the match. I don't know how he was able to avoid maybe two other dangerous tackles, two different reckless challenges. And boy, oh boy, you got to say that The score line really should have been more than just 4-1 Canada. Let's be fair. The score line should have said probably 7 or 8 to 1 for Canada. They had an opportunity, multiple opportunities to get more in the first half. It was 1-1 at the half, and then they moved on, and they got three more goals in the second half. And you gotta say that it's just not really that good. Let me see if I can get Michael Lewis on the phone and. Going to dial him in. Maybe he's at his office. Try and get him.
You have reached 732-929.
I believe we have not got him.
So
we're going to try Mr. Lewis on his cell phone, see if he is available. Give it a shot here because I'd like to get him on the show. And don't worry. We'll get him on the show on Tuesday afternoon, Wednesday afternoon as well. See if we can get him on his cell phone.
Please enjoy this Verizon ringback tone while your party is reached.
Of course, we'll have to wait and see. And of course, he plays great music on his cell phone while he's waiting for calls to pick up. Probably just forgot about the show tonight. Nope, doesn't look like he'll be available tonight. That's okay. We'll have Mr. Lewis on available Wednesday afternoon after USA versus Belgium. So probably something has come up, and that's okay, ladies and gentlemen. We'll have him on Wednesday afternoon talking about CONCACAF as well. So no worries whatsoever. It's okay. We'll have him on another time. But don't worry. If you want to see information about CONCACAF region as well, if you want to talk about anything within the Confederation of CONCACAF, tropigol.com, www.tropigol.com. And, of course, stay up to everything that's going on within the CONCACAF region. Let's move on, of course, to the other matches that happened on Friday, September 2nd. Guyana, 2-0 victory over Barbados. St. Kitts and Nevis, along with Puerto Rico, was a 0-0 draw. So you have to say for Canada at the moment, they're leading their group. Guatemala, a 4-0 victory against St. Vincent Grenadines. And, of course, some people you probably know that play in Major League Soccer, like Marco Papa, scored the match winner in the 14th. Mario Rodriguez, former MLS player. There's also Yoni Flores, Freddy Garcia to add on to that total. Moving on to the other matches, El Salvador, a 3-2 victory over the Dominican Republic, a brace by Rodolfo Zelaya in the 54th, and of course converts his second on a penalty in the 78th minute. Dominican Republic, they tried to get back into this game, but of course the third goal was way too much for them, and they just couldn't advance. Some of the other matches, of course, one that you try to follow, but you really couldn't. It's Antigua and Barbuda. It was a 5-2 victory over Curaçao. We don't have the goal scorers at the moment, but Curaçao, for those of you that are not aware, formerly known as the Netherlands Antilles, so they've decided to change to become the country's I believe the original name of the country, Curaçao, or they were a part of Netherlands Antilles, and then they probably either changed back or they broke away from it. I don't know what the situation is, but that is what's going on. Suriname with a 1-0 victory over the Cayman Islands. Nicaragua defeating Dominica 2-0 over in Rosal Windsor Park on the island of Dominica. Trinidad and Tobago, 1-0 victory over Bermuda. over at Port of Spain at the Hazley Crawford Stadium. Kenwin Jones in the 45th minute of first half regulation got the only goal in the match for the Soka Warriors. And that, of course, is probably a good start for the Soka Warriors from them. Belize, 3-0 victory over Grenada. Haiti, 6-goal clean sheet destruction over the U.S. Virgin Islands. So there you have it. Those are the scores. Let's go to the groups and see how everyone is looking at the moment. El Salvador leading Group A with 3 points. Suriname in second with 3 points. But basically have scored two more goals than Suriname. So that is why El Salvador is leading Group A for CONCACAF. And as we keep on going with CONCACAF groups, Guyana leading Group B with 3 points. Of course, Trinidad and Tobago, 3 points, but Guyana scored one more goal than Trinidad and Tobago. Group C, once again, Bahamas has pulled out, so Nicaragua leads Group C with 3 points. Panama hasn't played yet. They'll play on Tuesday. Group D, Canada leading Group D, Puerto Rico and St. Kitts tied on the points with the scoreless draw. Group E, Guatemala and Belize tied with 3 points, but Guatemala has scored one more goal than Belize in Group B. And Group F, Haiti leading the group, scoring six, not giving up any. Antigua and Barbuda in second place, of course, they have allowed two goals, so that is why their differential is not as good as Haiti. So that's basically your CONCACAF World Cup qualifying group stage situations, round two. It's going to be very interesting. And, of course, as we move ahead onto the show, it was an interesting World Cup, excuse me, not a World Cup qualifier. It was a friendly between the USA and Costa Rica. And, of course, on the line right now is, of course, one of my fellow MLS Talk writers, Earl Reed. Earl, you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right.
Where
yes,
are
I'm
you?
Here. Where am I?
Where are you, Earl?
Somewhere in the central part of the state of Delaware. So.
Are you? Oh, really?
Yeah, so.
I didn't know Delaware had a central part.
I think it does. Most people blink and it's gone. So, yeah, I think, it's kind of long but not very wide. So, yeah, we live about halfway down, so not very remarkable, but anyway.
Well, you know what? It's okay. No problem. Just as long as you live there, that's all that matters.
Yeah, that's about it. So.
That's about it. Well, Robert is going to join us very shortly, of course. Robert Hay Jr., our fellow MLS Talk writer, as we discussed that friendly, which, you know, I have to say I didn't really mind the result, to be honest with you. I thought that the result was – now, don't get me wrong, Earl, I know we want to see the USA earn victory against every single opponent they play here in the States or away, but – I mean, I can't get that worked up after what I saw.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. You know, the lineup wasn't the strongest that we could put out there. Obviously, Clint Dempsey hasn't been called in. He's someone that's going to start in the attacking part of the team. You have Tim Chandler, who we've all wanted to see. He started in place of Steve Cherundolo. I don't think Maurice Adu is our best holding midfielder. You know, and you could also argue as far as Edgar Castillo, Michael Roscoe-Fiscal, and Jose Torres, each of those positions, and Robbie Rogers for that matter. So, you know, there are a number of players that we're trying out here, and I think it's, you know, we would like to see a victory. We really, you know, won the battle, I think, as far as possession goes. You know, we I'd say we tired out a little bit in the second half, but besides that, you know, I thought it was a pretty good display. It's just, you know, it is unfortunate that we didn't find that finishing touch to be able to put us ahead or at least equalize.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt that when you're talking about, I thought Timothy Chandler actually played a good game. You could see, and probably from all those players on the field, the young ones, the new kids coming through, those that did well coming off the bench against Mexico down in Philadelphia, my concern was that they were going to tire themselves out before halftime. And unfortunately, it showed towards the last 5, 6, 7 minutes of the game.
Yeah, I think Jurgen Klinsmann really wants them to play a more, really close down when they're on defense. And when you're playing that kind of a defensive system and then trying to get into the attack, yeah, you wear down if you're not used to doing that. And I would imagine most of these guys on their club teams don't really go through that kind of a workout in their matches. I mean, it's very difficult when you're asked to do that for 90 minutes. And Klinsmann only used 2 substitutes in this match, if I'm not mistaken. So in that regard, you know, maybe he's trying to, impress upon them that, you know what, fitness is essential. The way we're going to be doing things here, we need to have a 90-minute effort. And, I mean, you could see going into that half where, the halftime when we were still scoreless and Costa Rica started to turn the game around, they had a couple of they had one really good chance and one that was kind of a long shot. You could just kind of see the momentum start to shift. And that
Absolutely.
Is when I started to get a little bit worried about, okay, what's going to happen here in the second half? Are we going to be able to hang on with players, and it really, to me, it's surprising that you have a full bench. Now, granted, they weren't the most attacking players, and maybe after a certain point, you know, after the 65th minute when Costa Rica scored, maybe you don't want to bring on a guy like Spector to substitute on for, you know, Castillo or whoever. But still, it's really putting a lot, you know, ask a lot of these guys, and then you're having them go over to Belgium in a couple of days and play mm-hmm. another friend. So, yeah, I don't know how many of these are going to start again, but, you know, it's a pretty big drain in California evenings. Kudos to those guys for going out there and giving it. They're all.
Yeah, California dreams. There we go. That's
victory,
something I've never heard before.
Trump.
Oh, Victor. Oh, okay, fine. well, on the line joining us is our other fellow MLS Talk writer, Robert Hay Jr. Robert, welcome. Welcome back to the show.
First of all, I was hoping we'd do the show live from the site of the game, but I guess the logistics didn't work out. I could use some beach time in sunny California right now.
What's the matter? You can't handle the Indian summer on the Northeast?
No, it's, for some reason, it's just not as pleasant.
Oh.
Call it a personal bias.
Listen to this, my God. Well, anyway, what did you get out of the friendly against Costa Rica from the U.S. perspective?
Well, from the U.S. perspective, I like to see the experimentation that Klinsmann threw out there. I like seeing a little 4-3-3 from the team. And I'm just going to repeat probably what a lot of people have already said in print and probably what Earl's already said. The U.S. looked really good in the first 30 minutes of this game. Either fatigue started to play a factor or frustration or whatever, and they just finished poorly. My takeaways are, Klinsmann's dedicated to bringing in some dual nationals, and they noted that on the ESPN broadcast, and that backfired at times and benefited the team at times. He also seems very dedicated to these players that were on the pitch. Earl noted, you know, they only used 2 substitutions. He only used 2 subs in this game, which was surprising. To be honest with you, Orozco, this guy should probably – I would have taken him out. He was playing very poorly in the second half, and I personally want to see a little more Tim Ream. And for a while, I did want to see Bill Hamid try and get his first cap, but maybe not in front of that back line. But I think the big takeaway is it's one friendly under a new guy where he's just trying some things out. We wish for a better result, but it's not the end of the world.
No, I agree. It's not the end of the world. And I think for once, I don't mind losing by a goal to nil to a team like Costa Rica because, you know, the only thing about Costa Rica is, you know, they might have a couple of players, you know, that they're trying to bleed in, but at the same time, you know, they don't have a head coach. You know, at the moment, it's an interim head coach. And apparently they got a former coach from several, maybe eons ago, that they've resurfaced him, which I always thought Alexander Guimaraes would probably come back, but maybe they've already had enough of him. Who knows? But I think it's not really the end of the world. I agree with you, Robert. But I have to say this, though. As much as it's nice to see Orozco Fiscal and Edgar Castillo getting this opportunity, I think, and Earl, you can answer this question. Do you think it's time that they should just stop?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, one of these days you've got to just start saying, you know what, we've seen kind of the second team, these guys, you know, we've got to try them out, and I think it's good to bring them in and see how they fare. But eventually you've got to start trying to figure out, you know, for when you have the qualifiers, okay, who is really going to be your starting back four? You have to give them a chance to play together, I think. You know, so if that means if you're going to end up moving Bocanegra back to the left back at some point, or, I mean, because really that right now that's one of our big problems. The other big problem, obviously, is not having two strong center backs at the moment, you know, really, you know, nailed down. But I think you've got to really start figuring that out, and that's where Klinsmann's, because he started a little bit late, I think, in this process, only having like a week before the Mexico friendly. You know, he's got to start saying to himself, okay, let's start getting this nailed down. We got to start having Tarundolo in here. We've got to bring in Ream. We've got to bring in guys who are really going to have a chance to make the big time when it comes.
Go ahead, Robert.
No, I agree. I think the scary thing, and this is maybe my pessimism sneaking in a little bit, maybe this is what Klinsmann thought would possibly be his starting back four. I mean, we know that this is going to be a problem in the upcoming World Cup qualifier in 2014. We all know Chandler looks to be possibly the answer, you know, at fullback. And there's this, you know, left-back conundrum. What's Castillo? You know, is he the new answer? Well, he didn't look like the answer today, so who's going to be the new answer at left-back? Hopefully this wasn't Klinsmann's idea of a starting back four. I don't think it was, but I hope not. But, we didn't really answer too many questions. And he did get started late, so it's time that, and I know that's what he is doing, but hopefully he's starting to give a serious thought to, okay, we need to lock down these four positions and figure out who's going to play where. And hopefully Bocanegra plays a role in that. You know, being the captain, approaching 100 caps, he should be the guy that really is able to start grooming his successor back there and grooming some of this young talent, and hopefully he's a positive influence on him. I know his play was a little rough in the second half, but hopefully he recovers from that and continues to be a positive presence for these young guys.
Yeah, I have to say so. I think Chandler has not, if it's not Tarundolo, I would have to say it's definitely Chandler locking down that right fullback position. And, of course, left fullback is going to be a bit of a problem. Robert, you said it looks like Clinton's working on a 4-3-3. I don't know. To me, it felt more like maybe a 4-1-3-1.
It was, and I know Earl's article on MLS Talk disagreed with the 4-3-3, and it was a very fluid formation because Donovan just sort of floated up and to the side and around, and I think Klinsmann is really putting a lot of leadership and basically go out there and make play. I think that's the instructions he's giving him, go out there and make plays. So a 4-3-3 is a little, maybe a lazy characterization just because of the passing and the fact that, you know, two of the midfielders are playing up. But I think you're right. There's a couple of different ways to characterize that formation. I think probably the best way to characterize it as a generality, though, is possession with some of the guys in the middle floating out and some of the, you know, just switching back and forth between the wings and the midfield players just trying to create space and create some opportunities. So, and you see that a lot in a 4-3-3. So I think that's me and me just being a little bit lazy, but I think that's what people feel like when they talk about a 4-3-3.
You lazy? Never. Come on.
No comment.
Okay, fine, no comment. But here's my question for you, Earl. As much as Robbie Rogers did very well against Mexico coming off the bench, do you think he's better off as a substitute than a starter? Because apparently it seemed that while he was involved into the play, his decision-making was behind maybe by 2 seconds.
Well, I thought in general the front group, they seemed to be a little bit slow on making decisions. There seemed to be a couple times when if they would have hit the ball one, you know, first time, or just been a little bit quicker in anticipating where the ball was going to be coming in, like on a cross, you know, we would have had a really great chance to score. And I mean, Rogers definitely sticks in my mind. I think right now the issue with him on the right is that I believe he's a left foot, so he's got to come inside to be able to use his best foot. So you aren't going to get really any width from him. You know, whether it's—I guess Freddie Adu doesn't really prefer playing on the wing so much. I think he likes playing centrally. But you have, you know, Donovan that can play out there. I guess Bedoya is another one who has been tried on the flank. Maybe he is better coming off the bench as far as Robbie Rogers goes. Maybe he's. I mean, it was kind of a serendipitous goal that he had against Mexico. I mean, he just had kind of – it was almost as if he eluded the marking because they didn't realize he had come on the pitch. But, I think – but he had a couple other opportunities in that match as well, so I don't want to take anything away from him. But, you know, it's just a little different tactic when he's on the right as opposed to when he's on the left, where I think when he's on the left, he can pretty much do what we expected Brett Shea to do, which he didn't do in this match. I didn't think he provided much width at all, which was kind of strange to me. It seemed like he was more like cutting runs off and cutting inside and trying to take on defenders as opposed to getting wide and cross. So anyway.
Right. No, that's fine, because that's how I felt too. I just felt that maybe him starting the match was a bit behind, you know, or not according to plan. I felt Robbie Rogers is a better player coming off the bench and maybe used as a spark. I felt that, and of course we're all twittering during the match, except for Earl, because he had to get up early in the morning. But no, I'm just joking.
I'm seconding that one. I didn't do any of that because I had to get up early in the morning too. So
what is your night?
Wusses unite. You're darn right.
United.
But
if you don't mind, I was going to say sometimes John Harkes can be here or there with what he says. I thought that he was pretty astute in saying that we didn't. You know, we had a really narrow formation, I think, in this. When we brought in Breck Shea, it seemed like it was as if he was told to not play the wing much. Castillo was not overlapping hardly at all in this match. You did get some overlap from Chandler, but, you know, the way Robbie Rogers, what I just discussed, he wasn't going to get any width. So we were pretty narrow, aside from Donovan maybe getting out to the wing on occasion in his – anyway.
Listen, don't ever quote Harkes again, would you please?
Okay.
Wait. The genius that is John Harkes?
Oh, stop it. Now you're going way. Listen, just because he's a former DC hero, that doesn't mean you got to quote him as a good color commentator.
Well, Earl was right, though. He did nail a couple of points, surprisingly, in this one. And then one of them was the width thing. I think the other one, and we'll probably get into this a little bit more, is Bocanegra blowing the offside trap on the goal. He caught that one pretty right on the mat, or, you know, right spot on. And I think this was as bad as this might have been for some of the U.S. players. For John Harkes as a color commentator, he gets an 8 in my book.
Okay, fine. He gets an 8. And that's the only time I want to hear him getting an 8. No, I'm just kidding. But
did he pay you?
Stop it.
I think you paid Robert for that.
Anyway. It's getting crazy. Anyway, I was going to say I felt Robbie Rogers should have been subbed out of the game when they were bringing in Juan Agudelo, because I thought they should have gone up with two forwards and go back to maybe a 4-4-2 just to help out Altidore, because while he looked pretty decent at the beginning of the game and, you know, just switching it up, I felt like you got Altidore, who's a straight forward attacker and at the same time can be a target man, and Agudelo, of course, I've seen Agudelo many, many times. I mean, he can go anywhere and everywhere on the field, making runs, trying to be elusive. He could have at least curled in a couple of balls to Altidore, who could have just headed that sucker in. But unfortunately, it's a straight swap. I don't know. Do you guys feel that this formation could be the new thing for the national team, not like what Bob Bradley was trying to do?
I'll take this one first, I guess. I agree with you on the fact that Altidore and Agudelo would be great up top, because we saw, especially in the first half, when the crosses weren't coming in or the passes weren't coming in on time, Jozy Altidore was running, you know, offside runs. I think I counted it four times he was offside in the first 35 minutes of the match.
Mm-hmm.
I think having an Agudelo up there would have helped with that, because you wouldn't have had to rely on Rogers, Donovan, or Shea, or whoever else to try and get the pass in on time, which, as we've noted, was a problem. In terms of formation, I'm maybe it's my own biases in terms of my style of soccer that I like to see. I don't think a 4-3-3 is a terrible thing, or some sort of hybrid 4-3-3 or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
A 4-2-3-1, whatever,
I said 4-1-3-1.
4-1-3, yeah. Some sort of possession-based, passing-based offense. I don't think that's a terrible thing for this kind of team. You have to find some key players. Once again, you have to find that left and right backs who can overlap, make overlapping runs, and provide those good passes. But, I like seeing the United States team take some risks and try some new things. I think Bob Bradley's 4-4-2 triangle was just sort of stayed. It was just it's been there, done that. It hasn't worked. Let's try some different things and see if we can move forward. That being said, the next time we do some sort of 4-3-3, let's not put Maurice Adu back as your holding midfielder. Hopefully that was just an anomaly, but I think it's a good idea to try these things and see if maybe this can be the type of system where we can bring up some of the younger players, some of the dual nationals, as they refer to them constantly throughout this match.
Nationals.
Yes.
We're politically correct in soccer. The dual nationals. Show your dual citizenship and then put on a USA jersey.
Five years later, I think.
makes me think of handing like Donovan and Dempsey pistols and having them take, 10 steps away from each other or whatever and turn around, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That works. I think we all understand. I think Clint Dempsey and Stuart Holden are going to be on this team once the qualifiers and once you get to those international match days for friendlies, just to prepare yourselves for World Cup qualifying. I think you're definitely going to see that coming up shortly. I mean, I don't think you're saying you're replacing those two. You're just saying you want to take a look at some new players.
Yeah. The one other thing I'd like to say is, being at the Mexico friendly, in the post-game conference, Klinsmann really made it clear that he was focusing the team on certain things. So I didn't get a chance to hear his comments afterwards. But this match, he had a couple of real talking points beforehand where, so maybe the narrowness of the wings and then having the fullbacks overlap, maybe that was one of his talking points. And also what they did, you could see they played a pretty high line and tried to do offside trap. Maybe that was a focal point. So if that's the case, then he's really trying to teach them. And so if that, maybe the result to him isn't the big deal. What he wants to see is improvement in specific areas for the team and in order to see them grow and to start playing what he believes to be the formation that works best for who their best players are.
Yeah, that's how I see it, to be honest with you. I'm not caring if we get a good result or not. I mean, if they can put in a goal or two and find a way to somehow get a positive result, I mean, that's fine. But right now, I mean, I think we're in the moment where, okay, it's already after the Gold Cup. We have about maybe, well, now counting Belgium on Tuesday afternoon, you know, now we're saying there's like 4 or 5 games left in the season. Whatever happens, it's not a big deal. If it's a draw, it's a draw. If it's a loss, fine. So if it's only a loss by a goal, it's not a big deal. It would have been 0-0 if Tim Howard, great save on the original shot, unfortunately couldn't handle the rebound by Rodney Wallace from Costa Rica, Ian Dark. Costa Rica, not Honduras. I felt bad for Ian Dark, and he's a good guy. I met him after the Argentina-USA game at the New Meadowlands. He's a good guy. I just felt bad for him because he kept on saying Honduras. I thought he was actually talking about Andy Nahar. I didn't know he was actually calling Rodney Wallace a Honduran.
Yeah, well, I think that goes back to the obsession that the U.S. Soccer has with Andy Nahar, because now they're integrating Honduras into all of the talking points for the announcers. That's kind of a hard pitch. They keep talking about him, and he's not going to come, but somehow it keeps working into the talking points for these broadcasts.
Yep, very, very true. Maybe Rodney Wallace if he hears warning. Go ahead, Earl.
Maybe if Nahar hears his name enough on these broadcasts, maybe he'll all of a sudden say, oh, I want to play for the United States because they really, really, really need me.
It would be nice.
Yeah,
well, he might need him. I don't know.
They could definitely use a player like Andy Nahar in a game like this. There's one thing that Andy does well. It's provide service from the wings. I mean, just ask Charlie Davies and Josh Wolf in MLS this year. So that's – he, in all seriousness, probably has a skill set that the U.S. could use. It's just not going to happen. So
right.
Those who are holding
absolutely.
Out hope.
Absolutely. Yeah, there you go. Before we're going to preview Belgium on Tuesday afternoon – one more thing. How terrible was it that Landon Donovan had a goal right on his foot and he pushed it wide to the far post? That was, oh my God, that was just absolutely gut wrenching. I thought he had a goal and he shoved it wide right.
It was like a gifted opportunity to him. I mean, it was just a beautiful play started by Shea. And, I don't know how you missed that, but he found a way. I mean, he had the goalkeeper beat easily. And, you know, I guess it's just one of those things sometimes you don't hit the target. Probably in practice he hits it, you know, 9 times out of 10 or maybe even more than that. You know, it's just one of those deals.
He seemed a little off with some of his passes and everything else in this game. I think there seemed like a little bit of fatigue factor for Donovan. It's probably a good thing he's not traveling to Europe for this next friendly, and he's going to stay with the Galaxy, although they have a pretty big match themselves. So he better – if he is fatigued, he might want to rest up a little bit. But I think just throughout the game, he was a little off with his passes, with his free kicks. It just everything was a little off.
Yeah, I think so. Let's go right now to, we're going to discuss the friendly coming up on Tuesday afternoon, and that is the friendly against Belgium. They'll be played in Brussels at the National Stadium. And, of course, may I say the Belgians do very well with mussels and fries. Yes, there's a Belgian restaurant in Manhattan, so I go there every single chance I get. European Cup qualifying. Belgium walks away with a 1-1 draw against Azerbaijan. And I know they're only playing us in a friendly on Tuesday, but what does that say to you about this Belgium team that's supposed to be some sort of a comeback team, some sort of a, they're replenishing with youth and stuff? Why would they leave Azerbaijan with a draw?
It's a good question. I mean, they have quite a few Premier League players and also Ligue 1 and Eden Hazard and Peter Vermaelen or Thomas Vermaelen, excuse me. I did that again. I did that on a – it's Thomas. And Noah Fellaini. Yeah.
It's a running gag.
Peter Vermaelen is what I keep thinking, but it's Thomas Vermaelen.
Don't say for doing a Benny Hill skit. Come on.
So, you know, you'd think that they'd be able to handle a smaller, you know, nation from Eastern Europe than what, you know, than what they can. I mean, the league's not bad. It's just, you know, I don't know. It's, and so maybe they'll be looking for blood here in this friendly with us, too. You know, really, maybe they'll be even more intent on trying to, you know, prove that they still have it or that they're not going downhill. You know what I mean?
I hear you. They're going to try and save as much face as possible. I think not having Landon Donovan on the team for Tuesday, which I will agree with, I will agree with you, Robert. To me, it feels like either he's starting to run down a bit with his time with the Galaxy, or maybe Klinsmann probably will take a look and see who else he can use in place of Landon Donovan. And I understand Kyle Beckerman will take the trip to Belgium and probably in Donovan's place.
Yeah, then and that would be coming off of a match they have tonight, I believe it is, against and the opponent just slipped my mind. So hopefully he can get some shut-eye on the trip over. I think it'll be a good thing to see what this U.S. team can do without Donovan. Obviously, Klinsmann thinks highly of him. He's the number 10 on this team, literally the number 10, because Klinsmann likes to do his 1 through 11 numbering. and it seems like he's tasking him with more of a creative role, which I'm not, God forbid, I challenge Jurgen Klinsmann on these things, but, you know, I'm not sure if he's a traditional number 10 or even close to being a traditional number 10. But I think it'll be good for this team to see what they look like and what they can do without Donovan in case, you know, in case they have to play without Donovan for whatever reason. So this team can't be built on one player. It'll be good to see how they do without him and who can step up, probably Dempsey, but who can step up and you know, be the best player in the midfield. So I'm curious to see what it looks like.
Absolutely. I'm kind of curious myself. Really quick here, and before we get towards the end of the show here, let me ask you this, Robin. And Earl, you can chime in afterwards. You said that Landon Donovan is becoming more of a free-flowing type of player. He can be on the left. He can be on the right. He can be in the middle. Is Klinsmann trying to make Landon Donovan into the U.S. version of Lionel Messi? I'm not saying he's got – I don't mean – I'm assuming he still has a speed, Landon, but I don't know if Landon is that type of trickery type of player, if you understand what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah. I don't know if he's as much trying to make him into a Messi as – I'm trying to think of some other – maybe a Van Persie type, although that's even a little misleading. He's not nearly as creative and as physically talented as Messi. But I think what Klinsmann's trying to do with him is to say basically, okay, set up a shot or take your shot. Do what you think is best. So, and that, you know, that once again gives him the freedom to roam wherever he thinks he can find space or wherever he can receive a pass and so forth. I think Klinsmann is giving him a lot of freedom and a lot of artistic license, maybe is the term I'm looking for, to just go out there and make plays. Once again, I don't want to question the man. He's obviously has a lot deeper history of soccer than I do. I just don't know if that's Donovan's game or if that's what he's perfectly fit to do. I don't know if he's creative enough to be that type of player. That being said, who is on the U.S. team? Freddie Adu? Not on this team? I don't know.
All right. Earl, real quick.
See, I would say actually one of Messi's teammates, maybe Cesc Fabregas. I mean, to me, Cesc probably has a little bit – now, he doesn't go off to the flank as much, but I do think, you know, maybe more of a creator. But I don't really see – Donovan having the foot skills that, let's say, Messi does, being able to take on guys and just be a magician on the field. I don't see that really, and so, you know, whatever Donovan ends up becoming as far as this formation goes, fine. It's just I'm waiting to see it. We really need to see it here pretty soon.
Yeah, agreed.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, we'll see what happens without Landon Donovan on Tuesday afternoon on ESPN, 2:30 Eastern, 11:30 in the morning Pacific time. For Earl Reed, Robert Hay, and, of course, myself, Daniel Feuerstein, thank you very much for listening to this special one-hour show. There will be a second show to review USA versus Belgium Wednesday afternoon, 2:00 Eastern. Please enjoy your football. We got a break. It's amazing. No league games. We'll talk to you on Wednesday afternoon. Take care, everyone.